Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 280 of the Keep Moving Forward podcast with me, your host, Anthony DiDomenico, coming to you live Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're live on Facebook. As always, though, the podcast is available at anchor.fm/KMF podcast. Also available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to 5-star rate and review. I love reading reviews. I love sharing on social media and bragging about the best podcast listeners out there. That is you guys. Also, if you like the video option, Spotify's got it. I know everybody's like, oh, I gotta watch the video. I didn't see the live. It's always available. Go over to Spotify and you can also 5-star rate and review there as well. Built Bar, it's got a ton of new flavors coming out. All of them seem to be puff flavors. If you're a marshmallow and chocolate fan, this is your year. Go to builtbar.com, use code WWROPODCAST. You will save 10% off your order. Sail Away Coffee is the best nitro brew out there. They are a local Long Island company, so you know I get behind them, but it really is that good. Check it out, sailawaycoffee.com. Use code WWBRO10. You will save 10% off your order. My good buddy John Ziegler has a comedy special. It's been out for about a year now. If you haven't seen it, what are you waiting for? Also, go follow him on Instagram over at John Ziegler Comedy. Click the link in his bio. It's called John Ziegler Getting My Affairs in Order. And also, you'll see some information and also where to check out the write-up on John Ziegler. He was a guest speaker at a cancer survivor's banquet. Awesome, awesome thing. Just the, you know, the survivor part is the best part of that. But it's also nice to see that he's being recognized for what he's done and his fight. So check him out over at John Ziegler Comedy on Instagram. Give him a follow. Tell him I sent you and tell him I'm the most pleasant person in the world. And I'm sure he'll argue with that. Anyway, I am really excited tonight to be joined by our guest, Jose Ramon. Jose, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How's everything?
I'm good, man. I'm so pumped to have you on the show. I know you from the Burndown podcast. That's where I saw you. And I saw that clip. And you were like, just like, I forget what it was, but it was like almost like a scene from Rocky where you were like, go get it. You just go take it. Yeah. And I was like, yes. I said, I don't know who this dude is, but I got to share it. And that's how you hit me up. And I'm glad to have you on the show tonight. Jose is the author of Live Your Fucking Story.
That's right.
And I don't think, first of all, great name for a book. I don't think you can get more to a point, and there's another title that kicks you in the teeth that way, in a good way.
That's right.
Was that like the idea?
Yeah, I mean, I had different ideas, but to live your life, you know. So I when I came up with the title "Live Your Fucking Story," it's a wake up call. It's your story. It's your life. It's in the book. We talk about living your dash. And in that dash, you got the day you were born, right? And then mm-hmm. you got the day you're going to pass away. What's important is that little dash in there. And that dash is where your fucking story matters. Your story matters. And it's your life. It's not, and I talk about this in the book, you know, as much as I love my family, but it's not my mom. It's not my dad. It's not my sisters. It's not your wife, your kids. It's your life. You know, you got to do what you love. It's to live your story, you know, live an impact on the world.
And that's a great way of putting it and everything. Cause like you just said it there, it's not you, as much as you love your family, it's your life. And I think a lot of people feel guilty and selfish, you know, when they try to do things for themselves, you know, they want to make somebody else happy. They want to make their wife happy, their kids happy and I think that they lose that happiness in themselves by putting everything into that one basket. Is that kind of what this is about?
I mean, absolutely. If you live your life for other people and their perspective and their opinions, what happens is a lot of things happen. But one thing that's happening is if you don't live the story that you want to live first of all, let me back up. If I was to summarize a 30,000 word book, because the book's about 33,000 words, that's about 160 pages, right? If I was to sum it up in one sentence, it would be this. Live your fucking story through what you love to do. And that's the key, is what you love to do. It's not what someone else is doing. And if you don't live your life, what happens is if time goes by, maybe it's your partner or maybe it's a good friend of yours, and 20, 30 years go by and you look back, you're going to have animosity towards first yourself. You're going to have animosity towards them. And you're angry because you didn't take a chance what you really wanted to do. And that's important, you know, to live your life. And you make the decisions. It's your life. Because when you go in the casket, no one's going in with you. No one's going in with you. Even as much as they love you, they're not coming in with you. You're going in by yourself. So why aren't you living your life?
Yeah. And if you've been to any Italian funerals, you'll know that somebody will try to throw themselves in that casket at least once. They'll try, but it's still you that's going in.
Yeah.
You know, it's so true you put it that way, because it's true. Once we're gone, that's it. It's our life. And I never, you know, that dash, that's what's hitting me hard, man. Because it's like, you know, and it's little. It's like life. It's small. It's a little dash in between the 2 years.
And I want you to think about something else. When you live, think about this. This is really, and all you listen to, really think about this. If you don't jump on what you love to do, not only are you going to have animosity towards yourself, but what happens is you're not impacting other people in the world. And then you're like, okay, what's Jose talking about? Well, let's look at history. Let's look at the airplane, right? Before, when the brothers try to get this thing going off the ground, if they didn't follow their passion and love what they do to get this plane off the ground, this controlled plane, we wouldn't be flying today.
No.
Unless someone came up with it. So if you look at all the things that people took a stand for and what they love, they impacted us in different ways. So if you don't take a stand, how are you going to impact other people? What you understand what I'm saying?
100%. And, you know, I love this mentality. I love this whole mindset. And what I always try to get to on the show, and especially in the beginning, how we got to that point. Like, so
Right. Are
you always this like positive and like straightforward, or does something like, you know, something change in you that you're like, okay, I gotta take life, you know, by the balls, and I gotta just go forward with it and do what makes me happy?
Well, I have another book out that came out. It's called I'm Possible. It's on Amazon as well. And that book focuses on how your thoughts create your reality. You are where you are today because of what you believe. And another point is in that book is you don't get what you want. You get what you are. You have to believe that you're that already. You know. So in my life, I talk about that in that book, but in my life back in 84, I remember I was watching the Olympics.
Okay.
And 1984 Olympics, we were watching the gymnastics, and I was with my cousin and my aunt, and I was in Florida at that time. And I remember I saw them doing gymnastics. I was like, man, I like to do that. And I was already at the age of 14. And then I said out loud, I was like, no, there's no way I could do that. They've been doing this as little kids. And my cousin looked at me and she said, you could be anything you want to be. And so she installed that little thought of believing in me. And then as time goes by, you know, other events happened in my life, which I talk in that other book, that progress for me to have that believing. And I didn't even know. I know today we call it the law of believing, the law of attraction. Yeah. In fact, there was no title to it, whatever title you want to put it today. But I just know these laws exist. You know, the physics backs it up, you know. So regarding this book, what really impacted me, this book, it's actually in the introduction, and I'll sum it up really quick. So
yeah,
I used to go to Montclair State University.
Okay.
And I went to college late. I did 7 years there in New Jersey. And I remember one false class that I had to take, and I went there, and our professor had a last-minute emergency, and someone stepped in for him. His name was Dr. Robert Gilbert. This is a really cool story. This is the foundation to this book. This what opens the door, the floodgates to the book. So, and this, a lot of people can hear this and they'd be like, wow, yeah, they can resonate to that story. So anyway, so Dr. Gilbert steps in for us. And so basically we had a free period and it was late. It was a late class and everybody stayed. And he was a really nice guy. He's like an icon over there. I don't even know if he's alive anymore, but a really nice guy. So he goes, I'm going to share a story with you guys. And he goes, I have another class that I emailed them in June, in the ending of June, and I emailed them that I wanted a 10-page paper from them how their summer went, and they would have to be emailed back to me by September 1st or before.
Okay.
I can read all these papers and I can be ready for the class. This is what he's telling us, right? So I'm like, okay, where's he going with this? Huh? So he says, there was one girl that stuck out to me out of everybody, and she wrote a beautiful 10-page paper how she went to Italy with her mom. They went all parts of Europe, and they went to all different art museums. And this, she said that she loved art since she was a little kid, and she's like, her and her mom would be in the museum, and didn't even know what time it was. They would forget to eat because they were so into the art, right? And they went to different museums. She goes, I had the best time of my life with my mom going to these art museums all over Europe. So he goes, we go back to class. He goes, I take her paper and I read most of it in front of the whole class the first day back. And then he goes, I turned to her in front of the class. I told her, I said, I have a question for you that's been bugging me. What is your major? And she goes, oh, I'm going to be a CPA. And he goes, I was sitting on top of my desk. He goes, I literally almost fell over. And he goes, a CPA? Why? And he goes, well, my father owns a CPA firm. My brother's a CPA, and my mother works for them. She goes, but it'd be easier for me. It's financial security for me to just go in with the family. He goes, but you just wrote a 10-page paper how much you love art. Why? Do you love being CPA? She's like, no. She goes, I'm doing it for the money's sake. And he goes, are you telling me? This is what he said. He told her. He goes, are you telling me that if you become a master and you become insane in that craft to master art, you're going to tell me that they wouldn't pay you a very comfortable living to work for someone to examine art and you could travel the world? Is that what you're saying? He goes, he couldn't believe that she was going to go that route. But that's not what she loved. And that's what the book's about. Doing what you love. That's how you impact society and you impact humanity. You know, I mean, look at the great Kobe Bryant is a great example.
Okay.
In how he mastered the game and how he impacted other people. I mean, unbelievable. Arnold Schwarzenegger is another one, you know?
Well, yeah, no, these people that, you know, take their craft and master it and you see it through them, like what, the love they have for it and the dedication they put into it. And I'm blown away by that story because it's true. Like, you know, this girl probably would have went on to be a CPA, made some money.
Maybe.
They got married, had kids, but there had always been something missing and she would be looking for that. And, you know, I pushed off what I wanted to do for a long time. I always wanted to be a comedian. And I'm not famous. I don't make $1 million doing it, but I love it. And every time I'm on stage, it's my dream come true.
Beautiful.
And I was always scared to do it because people will tell you, you can't do it. You know, you're not a comedian. You know, how are you going to do that? How are you going to do it? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just going to do it. And finally I got to the point where I just did it. And when I got on stage, I grabbed the mic and I was home.
Beautiful. And
I've never had that feeling with anything else in my life. It's hard. You know, sometimes it's hard to get across to people, like, you know, I don't think anybody's ever did so, you know, not many people have done something where the second you do it, it all makes sense. And that's what I think is what you got to find in life. You know, whether it be, you know, even if it's not something that you're making a living from, if it's just something that you're, that you do, you know, here and there just to refresh your batteries, to recharge your engines.
You know, you made a good point there. You know, I talk about it in the book, and there's a study that we push kids at the age of 16, 17, 18. You got to know what you want to do. And some people do grab it at that time. Mm-hmm. And they're fortunate enough to, they know what they want at the age of 14. There's many stories like that. But for the most part, the brain does not fully develop to the age of 25. So we're forcing these kids at the age of 16, 17, 18, you know, you should already know what you want to do. When you go to college as a freshman, you should already know what your major is. Well, why can't you dabble here, dabble and see what you love? Maybe you don't know what you love yet, like you.
Like I knew. Well, yeah, I mean, since a kid, I was like, what do you want to be? And I gave the answers that, you know, don't get, you know, you don't get talked to about it. Like, yeah, I want to be a cop or a fireman. Or, you know, this or that, because, you know, if I told somebody I don't want to entertain, make people laugh. I want to talk into a microphone. No teacher would have encouraged that, especially in the 80s or not, you know, that time. They never, They're like, no, you have to have a job. You got to have benefits. You got to, you know, pension. And listen, you should. I mean, I should have, you know, I spent 13 years gambling on myself and, you know, whatever. But I just feel like if I had done that, if I become the vice president of the pencil sharpener company, I'd be more miserable than I am now. Like, I'm just saying, like, it just wouldn't have been my thing.
It's doing what you love.
Yeah.
I'd rather, it's not about the money. Look, let's think about something. Ready for this?
Yeah.
Some people say, well, I as for a living, I would love to do this, but I don't see how I can make an income. But if you really become a master at it and you be insane to that craft, you'd be valued at the marketplace. Mm-hmm. You know, you ever heard of a gentleman by the name of Jim Rome? He passed away. Jim Rome. Okay.
Yeah.
Jim Rome, a long time ago, he passed away. Unbelievable. The statements that he said. And he said, some people, what do they do when they want more money? They go outside, they get the big rat and they pick it and we want more money. He said, that's not how you do it. You have to become insane to your craft. You have to be valued at the marketplace. That's how you get what you want, what you're worth. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? That's 100%. Really important.
I tell that to people all the time, like, you know, especially my day job. Excuse me. If, like, you know, the guys complain, oh, I'm underpaid. I said, we got to set your value. I said, you can't just expect somebody to give you more money because you want more money.
Yeah.
If you think you're under, go find a value and listen and go set that value. And if people want to give you that money, then yes. If they don't, move on to somebody who does and know your value, know your worth, but don't just expect them to hand it to you because it's never going to get handed to you.
No.
You know, that's what's great about this book too. Like, you know, just the message, like, you know, getting it, just going out and living it and being, you know, doing it, you know. And I, you know, the first book, it sounds like it's more of like, is it like more of like a roadmap to getting to this point, or is it also?
The first book is about the foundation of law. Your thoughts create your reality.
Okay.
You can call by believing. You can call and you can change matter and bend reality by your thoughts. Not all thoughts, the thoughts that you believe that are going to happen, those thoughts. Because we think it's, I think it's 60 to 70,000 thoughts we think a day.
Really?
Yeah, it's the science behind it. So not all those thoughts are going to impact reality. It's the thoughts that you're constantly believing. You're mm-hmm. constantly, so that's important. So going back to doing what you love, I want to share something, right?
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, there's a lot of things I would like to share, but I definitely want to touch on something that I put aside about. You ever heard of a man? He was a raw rider. Like, his name is Charles Bukowski.
Yes, I've heard of him.
He's a 20th century American rider, raw.
Now, I only know him. And I don't know him because I studied him. They mentioned him in a movie I like. So that's how two movies I like, I mentioned him. So that's how I know who he is.
So he talks about doing the thing that you love, right? And he makes some good points that I talk about him here, the points he does. So I'm gonna quote what he said here, and then I'm gonna elaborate a little bit on it, right? Okay. So this is what he said, and he's talking about riders, but you can take this in general and every
form of life. Yeah, yep.
Too many riders ride for the wrong reasons. Let me put my glasses on. That's what happens when you're 54 years old, right? Too many riders ride for the wrong reasons. They want to get famous or they want to get rich. They want to get laid by the girls with the blue bells in their hair. When everything works best, it's not because you choose riding, but because riding chose you. It's when you're mad with it. That's key right there, when you're mad with it.
Yes.
When it's stuffed in your ears, your nostrils, and under your fingernails, it's when there's no hope. But that, just like you, when you jumped into what you're doing, there's no hope of that. I'm going all after it. Now watch this. This is important. Basically, losing your mind to what you love to do. It's apparent he was referring to riders, but this message goes further. It goes to everyone who is mad with it, whatever it is, who you can't live without it, but love doing what you love, right? Watch this. This is key to this. He emphasizes that you don't need to, when you love what you do, you don't need to be motivated. You don't need to be pushed. You don't need to be convinced. You don't need to be forced. He says, just do it. It's a part of you. And look what he says. This is a quote from him. And then I'm gonna finish here, this part. We work. This is what he said. Check this out. We work too hard. We try too hard. He says, don't try. Don't work. It's there looking right at us, aching to kick out the closed womb. What is he talking about when he says, don't work? Don't try. He's saying, don't try. And what he's talking about is, don't try. Let me take this off. Don't try to love what you love. It shouldn't be a trying. It should come from your heart. You don't need to be forced. So when you say, I need to try, he's saying, don't try. As a matter of fact, in his tombstone, it literally says, don't try. Where he's buried, it says on the tombstone, don't try.
I bet people take that the wrong way. They mean like he was saying, don't try at anything. No.
He says, don't try to do something you love. It should be natural.
Yep. Do what comes natural. Yep.
Watch this. Ready? Watch this. I got to put my glasses on. He's expressing not that we don't try to be the best at what we love to do, but rather don't try to love the thing that we say that we do. Then it makes sense to us. When Bukowski says, if you're going to, then he says, there's another quote from him. If you're going to try, go all the way. So when you love something, you go all the way. You throw you throw all the eggs in one basket. You're all in. Just like Kobe Bryant says. Kobe Bryant said that he had no plan B. No plan B. He put all his eggs in one basket, and that's how you have to live your life. And you want to know something? That's how I live my life. And everything I've done, I never had a plan B. As honest as I can be, I've never had. I have fallen in my face. Things didn't look like it was going to work out for me. I didn't care. The naysayers came out all under the rocks. You know, even the closest to my family, which I adore, they meant well. The intentions were well. But like, you know what, Jose? Going back to my business back in 1988, I owned a wonderful tinting company.
Okay.
Film on cars and homes and buildings. And when I came from Florida, they were like, Jose, you know, I failed at my first shop. I after 3 months, dead. Done.
Really?
Yeah, so then I went back at it again, like the same year back in 1988. And I said, no, I'm going to do it again. And they were like, no, it's not going to work, this and that. I want to touch on the word decision. This we're going to get, making a decision about something. This is important.
Okay.
So when I open up my business, am I cutting you off?
I'm taking all this in, believe me.
All right. So when I open up my business, I had to get a part-time job. I worked for FedEx, which is a great job, but it wasn't for me. It was a station called TEB in Maywood at that time. I don't know if it's there anymore, but I was loading the boxes into the containers of which go into airplanes and stuff like that, right? So I was doing that because my shop was barely making the rent. I put my business.
Yeah.
And I met this guy, Mark Herwick, one time, and he actually taught me to trade better. And he told me something while I was doing that for 3 months. I was doing both things. He literally looked me in the face and he said, Jose, you got to make a decision. Either you do the wonderful all the way industry, or you quit and you do FedEx all the way. You can't do both.
Can't do both.
And what he was saying was, now I'm not saying you can't have different investments. I'm not talking about that.
Well, you got to put food on the table. Yeah, that's saying don't do that.
No, you can have different investments going on. Yeah. You know, you have different things going on. So that's not what he was telling me. What he was telling me was, what I heard was, Jose, you don't love doing that. You don't love going to that FedEx building at nighttime and doing that for 6-7 hours every night. No. You don't. That's why you're doing it. Do what you love. And you know what? That night, I quit in my mind the job, and I never went back again. And my whole family bugged out. What are you doing? Job security.
Security, yeah.
You got insurance. And I was like, here we go. Ready? Remember I was saying before, check this out. Remember I was saying before that if sometimes you got to do what you love, how you can impact other people.
Yes.
Your decision impacts people all the time. So why don't you impact people with the things that you love to do? So in my life, if I have 4 kids, okay? I mean, at that time, I didn't have any kids yet. I wasn't even married. But as I had my 4 kids, my decision to go for my business impacted all my kids, impacted my livelihood, impacted my wife. These are the things that was impacting. How was it impacting them? Well, because of me making that decision, I was an entrepreneur. I can control my business. I did what I want, when I want. No one fucking told me what to do. Yeah. I worked for FedEx. I was controlled. I never missed any football practices, any dances, any field trips. If there was a field trip, I was a chaperone. I didn't miss any of those things. I lost money at times because I would go to my kids, because my kids, once they're growing up, they're done. They're gone. They're adults. Like right now, my kids are adults, right? So my decision impacted their lives. And what decision? I did something that I loved. But if you looked at it from the senses at that time in 1988, it looked like a bad decision. It was not a good decision. Don't do it.
Absolutely. Because like I said, you know, the regular norm is security, you know, job, work, you know, do your 30, 40 years, get your pension, you know, retire and this and that. But there's more to life than that. There definitely is. And, you know, I believe that. And I never felt I fit in that norm. I always felt like there was more for me or that I was meant to do something else. And I, you know, talking into a microphone is it, whether it be on the podcast, comedy, this is what I was meant to do.
Beautiful. And by you saying that point too, I'm going to make another point. And everything I'm discussing is in the book.
Yeah.
The book, simple read, it'll impact your life. And it sounds like I'm selling the book.
No, that's what we're selling.
If I sell one book,
get the book.
The book is life-changing. But going back to that, some people say, well, I'm not good at that. I'm not good at something that I really love. That's either first of all, talent is overrated. Being mm-hmm. talented, that's overrated. You could be talented a little bit of something, but the people that make things happen are the ones that get insane and they put hard work in behind it. Those are the ones that do things that are impossible, right? So if you're talented or something, you're going to plateau. If that's all,
you put the hard work. Take you so far.
No, that's, you know, this, you know, if you're 6'6", I'm sure you could duck a lot easier than me being 5'6" and a half, right? But when I don't play basketball like that, but if I was insane to it at a young age, what about Spud Webb? He was 5'6". He won the dunking contest in 1986. How about those apples?
Yeah, and like when I first started doing comedy, you know, the booker at the clubs I started at said it takes 10,000 sets or 1,000. Oh, the first was 1,000 sets for you not to suck completely. 1,000 times getting on stage, not to suck, not to be good, but just to be good enough where you don't completely suck. And if you think about it, there's 365 days in a year. So if you get one spot a year, it still takes you over 3 years to not completely suck. So when you look at it, people right away want that instant gratification. They want that instant, like, give it to me. And I'm guilty of that too. I'm very like, you know, when I want something, it's got to be now. And, you know, when I looked at comedy and, you know, people laid all this out to me and I'm like 1,000 sets. I'm like, that's a long time. But it's true. You could feel it when you get to a certain point, things just turn. And then a couple more years later, it turns again. And then now 13 years in, you know, I last in December, you know, I hadn't done a full hour set since COVID. Just the way the pandemic happened and got back into it kind of slow. And I didn't know I was headlining the show. And when I got to the venue, when I got the email that day and they're laying the times out, that was my name and doing 45 to 60 minutes. And I'm like, what am I going to do? I haven't done this in 3 years. But it was all that training. It was all that everything I've done up to that point where all the work I put in the sets that it was just, and I wanted to do it. I wanted to get on stage. I wanted to just even prove to myself. And everything was like, I felt that like mindset shift where like, I'm playing against both sides. I'm like, I want to do it. And then my other side's going, you haven't done this in 3 years. This is a college audience. You're going to be 44 years old. They're not going to understand. They're not going to be with you. And like, it was going back and forth. And finally I just like, whatever, I'm going to go do this, whatever happens. And I had one of the best sets I ever had in my life.
Beautiful.
I did an hour and like, I didn't even at the point it was an hour. I was like, oh my God, we got to wrap this up. It's an hour. The crowd loved it. The kids loved it. And it was just a great moment. And it was because I did all that work before, all the time I put into it, that when these moments come up, I'm ready for it.
That's right.
And it's because I followed that whole path I wanted for myself that I can call myself a professional. And you can hand me a microphone any given moment of the day, any place, and I can give you 60 minutes.
Sweet.
I mean, and that's just, to me, that's the, you know, it's the least I could have got out of everything.
Anthony, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
And be honest. Do you think by chance what you're doing and the hard work you put in and how incredible you're at it, do you think that you love it?
I love it. Absolutely love it.
All right. Do you think if you didn't love it, you'd be where you're at today?
If you I would have quit a long time ago because I started with a bunch of guys, and there's maybe a few people still doing it from that first day I was on stage. And even with the podcast and radio, like radio is my first love. Like I grew up a Howard Stern fan, and like my parents listen to Howard Stern. I grew up with it. And listen, you know, everybody talks about how dirty he is and blah, blah, blah. It wasn't that. It was the connection he had with the audience that got me. It was him. Just like you felt like he was talking to you in a way. It was weird. It's a weird connection that he had with his audience. And I wanted to have that kind of connection with an audience where they're with me. They understand what I'm going through. They feel it. And this podcast, more than anything I've done, has probably connected on that level. Because I do. I talk about my struggles. I talk about what I go through in my life, the ups and downs. You know, I've had tremendous success. I've had tremendous failures. And, you know, I'm trying to fight through one of them now. And, you know, it just, but I haven't quit, and I won't.
So let me ask you a question. Could we get into a topic that I wanted to talk about?
Of course we can.
And it's in this book, and it's dear to my heart. And I think everybody needs to hear it, especially me. So there's a chapter that I have. It's called Never Quit. What if? That's the name of the chapter. Have you heard of a woman by the name of Liz Murray?
No, I have not.
All right. For those who have not heard her, let me have the honor to introduce who this woman is.
Okay.
Okay. First time I heard about it was in Montclair State University. I had to do a paper on her. I didn't know who she was at all. Right. This is back in 1996. Not when I went to school. Her story is in 1996.
Okay.
So Liz Murray, at the age of 15, quit high school. She quit school. Okay. Freshman. I believe it was a freshman. Both her parents contracted HIV. Okay.
Oh, my God.
She quit. No. Whenever you hear, say to yourself, I can't anymore. I'm going to quit. I want you to remember this lady, Liz Murray.
Okay.
It's always impacted me that she's in the book. Liz Murray, both her parents got contracted HIV. She quit high school. Her mom gets HIV. They were drug users, both of them.
Okay.
At the age of 16, her mother passes away. She's homeless. Liz is homeless. She's sleeping. Because her mom was sick and she was about to die. Her father, they put him in a shelter, and he's infected with HIV. And she was homeless. She was bouncing from friends to friends' houses to the point that her parents said, she can't stay here anymore. So she had nowhere to stay. She was sleeping in the park. She was sleeping in the subway. She was sleeping.
15 years old.
15 years old.
15 years old.
She was 16. She was homeless. When she was 16, her mom passes away from HIV turned into AIDS, correct?
Yeah.
And that's when it takes your life. Her father was still sick with HIV. The Board of Education of New York did not know, or the state of New York did not know, that she was homeless. She was not in school, and she was sleeping in the streets, right? Yeah. I want to read something to you that she said. This is important. This is important. This is, we're going to take this nice and slow. Even if we don't talk nothing else about the book, we're going to talk about this woman.
Okay.
Okay. Because this is going to impact us. Okay. I'm going to read something, my words, and it's going to mix into her words. Liz stated that it was, and I quote her, a powerful wake up call. That's what she said. It was a powerful wake up call. She said in her book, she realized that her mother had dreams as well as her life had ended prematurely. Okay. And she said, now this is what I'm saying now. What impacted her at her mom's death was that someone can go their whole life putting things off. The powerful wake-up call, what she called, was that she should be passing up out of her life now. So Liz Murray said that when her mom died, and she's like, that was a powerful wake-up call. She's like, my mom had dreams. She died. This is my life.
Yeah.
I got to take charge of my life, right? She said that she didn't want to wait and say, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. She realized that. She realized that waiting for tomorrow. Yeah, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. Tomorrow never comes. And what you're talking about, remember that scene in the movie I mentioned in the other podcast? It was when Apollo tells Rocky after he's training him.
There is no tomorrow. Yeah, there is no tomorrow.
He's repeating, hitting him in the head.
He goes,
what's the matter with you? And Rocky's like, I'll do it tomorrow. And he goes, there is no tomorrow. Yeah. There is no tomorrow. You know what? There isn't. Now, Liz Murray, you ready for this?
Yeah.
She makes a decision to try to get back into school. Okay, she's been out of high school, I think, 2 years, right? She's been out of high school for 2 years. She's trying to get back. Nobody's accepting her. At the same time, while this is happening, she's homeless. The Board of Education in the state of New York does not know she's homeless. Because, you know, if they find you're homeless, you're going to a shelter.
Yeah.
I mean, a foster home.
At that age, they'll put you in a home.
Yeah, they put you in a foster home right away, yeah. They're not going to tolerate a kid being in the street.
Nope.
So she had to. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine? My daughter right now is 16 years old. My daughter, I can't even imagine her thinking like this girl was thinking. So anyway, she's trying to get back to school after school after school. She can't get in. No one's accepting her. So she said she had enough money to get on the bus for an interview for a school.
Okay.
She said that she was starving. And she said that there was a pizzeria. And she goes, either I get the pizza, because she goes, I was really hungry. This is in her book. I was really hungry. I was starving. Or I get on the bus to go to the interview to try to get into this high school. You know what you think? Guess what she did? She chose.
She got on the bus.
She got on the bus. And because of that decision, going back to decision, the power of decision, and I talk about that in the book, the two D's, discipline and decision. Because of that decision, she went to the school. They accepted her. Still, she didn't tell nobody. You ready for this? She did a 4-year high school in 2 years.
Wow.
Graduated number 2 in her class. And the Board of Education still did not know.
They never knew she was homeless on the street.
No. No one knew. You ready for this?
Yeah.
I'm gonna show you how they found out.
Okay.
Her dream was to go to Harvard. That was her dream, to go to Harvard. She graduated number 2 in her class. She said she ate out of garbage cans. She slept in the park. She slept in subways. She slept inside sometimes in the schools. When the schools were closed, she would hide. She would hide over in buildings. She would sleep there. Can you imagine? Can you imagine that?
I can't.
Wait. And at the same time, you did a 4-year high school in 2 years and graduated number 2?
I mean,
in your class?
Most people just be worried about where the next meal is coming from, where the next night's sleep's coming from.
Now, keep in mind, New York City. The temperature drops. It's not Florida. It's snow. Do you think she had some nights that she couldn't keep warm? And she still had to do her homework. Now, she graduates high school number 2 in her class. Her dream was to go to Harvard. She writes, I'm not sure if it was the Daily News. This part I don't touch in my book. Yeah. I don't know if it was the Daily News or the New York Times, so don't quote me. One of them had a contest, and you have to write an essay about your life, why you should get a scholarship to Harvard. So she wrote about her life.
And that's how everybody found out.
They thought she was lying. So they did when they interviewed, because remember later on in life, she went on 2020 and stuff like that. Yeah. So the lady in 2020 says, when you went to this interview, they thought you were lying. They were calling you in because they thought everything you seen was a lie, that you were homeless and your parents passed away with HIV with AIDS. And you're living in the streets and you graduated number 2 in your high school and you did a 4-year high school in 2 years. That's impossible. This girl's lying. So they interviewed the person from the newspaper that was going to interview. He goes, I thought she was lying. So I called her in, and lo and behold, her story is true. She got a full ride to Harvard.
That's amazing.
I'm going to read a quote from her.
Okay.
So when you say, or when I say, I can't, man, this is too hard. Come on, man. Take a step back. Take a step back and remember Liz Murray, because she comes to my mind many times when I feel like I can't go further. Here we go. I want to read something to you. Hold on. She was on a TED Talk, and she said, I'm going to read what I wrote.
Okay.
Liz Murray mentioned in a TED Talk that even though she got rejected from school after school to go back, she always said to herself, what if? And this is what I ask you, what if about you? You know, don't quit on your dreams. Don't quit on the things that you love to do. Don't quit because you quit. You're quitting on your life and other people you can impact. How about that?
Oh, 100%. And, you know, I'm reminded like with that, with my mom, like, you know, she had a rough, very rough upbringing, in and out of foster homes, kicked out at 18 because her mother did not get money from the government anymore for her. She's on her own. She always wanted to go to college, never got the opportunity. So, you know, she became a mother, took care of her family, raised her kids. And when we were in high school, she decided to get a job at Hofstra so we could go to school for free, you know, to help. And then she went to school as well for free. She went back to school. She was the number one part-time student when she graduated, Phi Beta Kappa. Doing all this while working a full-time job and taking care of a family. My mother, so on Sunday, she would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and cook for the week. We didn't go without a meal. We didn't go without clothes being washed, all this. And it's true, like how many hours are in a day? This woman did all of this. And when she passed away, she was three credits away from her master's degree. She almost had her master's degree. She was this close. She unfortunately passed away in 2008. At the age of 52, but she was right there. She would have had her master's degree, where then she would have elevated herself at Hofstra, which she did. She went as high as you can go without having a master's degree at Hofstra, and she was going to become that next step. And it's just all from determination. You know, her thing was always, in this life, you're never too old to do anything. Because, you know, she was like, you know, at 40 something years old, she decided to go back to college, and not just like a rate. Hofstra University is a very good school, and she excelled while, like I said, doing everything, like taking care of her family, cooking for us, everything. And all this was done. Homework was done while we were watching television. She was doing homework, sitting outside. I remember her reading books and everything. She took this all on. And, you know, and I think about that, you know, and it's true. Tomorrow is not promised. You know, my mother was 52 and she passed away. I'm going to be 44. That's, you know, that age, it's not a big gap right there. And you think about how fast time goes and how little time we have on this earth to do things that you're not passionate about, does not make you happy. To me, does not make sense. And, you know, and this woman here wouldn't be denied. And that's like the whole thing is like, why are you denying yourself? And that's why, like, when I even heard the title of this book, I'm like, yes. Because I kind of like preaching that, like, you know, do the things that make you happy. I've been preaching on this podcast for years. And I mean, here it's like, bam, it's hit you right in the face. And hearing these stories of these people, you know, when you're talking about Bukowski not trying, you know, I mentioned that people like will say it like, because people, slackers will grab a hold of that. And they're like, well, he said, don't try. And you're like, no, it's not what he meant. And I'm reminded of my own things. I'm a big Star Wars fan. And Yoda tells Luke, do or do not. There is no try.
I love Yoda.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, like, it's try is to me, is having the intent to fail. If you say, I'm going to try, you know, like, I'm going to try to eat better today. I'm going to try to work out today. I'm going to try. The trying to me is having the intent. It's either you're doing it or you're not. And I think that's with life too, with things you want to do. And like with this, what you're talking about in your book. You know, like where it's like, live your life, live your story. This is your story. You write it. And, you know, just hearing like everything that you've accomplished, like you started a business. You know, how my brother started a business, too. I saw what goes into it. I see everything that goes into it. It's a lot of hard work. And it's you have to love it It's dedication. It's time, you know, time you put into it. So now when you're doing all this, you're, as you're mentioning, you're raising a family, you're starting a successful business. When does the writing bug like hit you? And it's like, okay, now I'm going to put this on, take my philosophy, what I live by, I'm going to put it on paper and get it out there. When does that like really hit you?
I don't know. It'll come to me. Like I'll figure out there's like two topics that I'm thinking of now. And I just, it comes to my heart and I just start to write. It's weird. I can't, it's not like I guess everybody's different. I never, like, if you were to ask my English teacher in high school, if Mr. Edwards was going to be a writer, she would have literally probably passed away laughing that hard on the desk because I was brutal. I was brutal. You know what I mean?
When I told my brother to be a comedian, he's like, you're not funny. He goes, how are you going to be a comedian? You're not funny.
You know, so I beat the odds. You know, I did my first book and then this book, and to my heart, this book will impact people, man, dramatically. Yeah. You know, I just had a close friend of mine that I haven't seen. As a matter of fact, I was on FaceTime with him. I haven't spoken to this guy in 25 years. And he found me and he saw my book. And he was like, what the? And he reached out to me. And he's like, oh, man, I can't read books. I guess he has a hard time reading it. He goes, I listened to your first book. My first book's on audio. This book's going to be on audio. It's not on yet. And he's like, Jose, man, it really impacted me. I have no words. I had to call you. I had to reach out to you, you know? He bought the book and he heard it. I was like, cool. I was like, that means more to me than anything, you know? And go, you know, before I lose my train of thought, I love talking about that. I live by the water in the city.
That's okay.
You know, so
city life.
before I lose my train of thought, wait, oh, hold on. I hope I didn't lose my train of thought. I want to say something we were just saying. I think I lost my train of thought on that. Maybe it comes back to me.
It'll come back.
But you know, your life is yours. What are you waiting for? What are you waiting?
And look at it. You got two books out, right? You have two books out, which is an incredible accomplishment in itself. I mean, just think about how people sit down to write a book and can't get three pages out. I mean, I know it's, and I've tried to write screenplays. I've tried to do all, and to me, it's just like, it's the most tedious thing ever. And you're getting these thoughts down and you're forming this book and it's positive. It's a really positive message. Now, does anybody ever question your positivity? Because it's your
I have great stories, man, like regarding the power of believing that I and those are the, but you know, people might, or close people to me, they might be like, oh, hold, I don't know about that what you're thinking. And I'll give an example, and I cover him in my book, my good friend Nelson. I'll sum it up. This is about you ever heard of the book The Art of Not Giving a Fuck?
No.
Mark Manson.
I heard of Mark Manson.
The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Yes. Okay.
Awesome book. Awesome book. Right. So he says something there that's true. Right. He says, and I touch a little bit on the book over here on a different perspective, but I like what he says. And he says that when he says, I don't give a fuck, he's not referring to, and me too. So before I even read that book, I had that belief system in my mind. Mm-hmm. When I say I don't give a fuck, I'm not saying I don't give a fuck about anybody. I don't give a fuck about adversity. Okay. I don't give a fuck about the naysayers. But I give a fuck about you. But I don't give a fuck what the words or the negative of adversity or the impossible. Those things I don't give a fuck. So you can say, yeah, I hope they don't give a fuck, but in that context.
Yeah, because we live in a world now where, you know, social media is very prevalent and I think it's a great tool. And I also think it's also the devil sometimes. It's, you know, the best of both worlds with it. And I like when people are using it for positive thing, like, you know, you're putting positivity out there. But that also comes with, like you said, adversity and people trying to tear you down again. And I think it all goes back to the message of this book is that your story is yours. And you have to write it. And there's only one person that can write it, and that's you. And why fill the pages with stuff that you don't want to do. And, you know, I think putting time into people that don't have your back and aren't there for you, that's also part of it. Would you agree with that? It's like, you know, getting a good, you know, a team around you that, you know, that pushes you forward.
For sure. For sure. I mean, yeah. I've been in situations that people around me were not seeing what I saw. So I was actually, the story I was just going to tell you, when I opened up my business, I bought a building, it's like an old brownstone, and I had to convert it into my business. So I hired someone, they broke everything down. They went 4 feet down into the mud. All you see is pipes. So one day it was cold. I'm in there and I'm literally visioning people coming in, the doors there, the car. I'm visioning, I literally saw it happening.
Yeah.
My good friend Nelson comes and he happened to come. It was already dark. It was cold. It was like kind of winterish. And he's like, hey, Jose. And he goes like, and now this guy, you know, he's good with money. He's careful with his money. Mm-hmm. He owns property. So he's really, when it comes to money, he really knows his stuff. You know what I mean? So he comes down where I'm at in the mud, right? His feet are getting muddy and we're both in. And it got quiet for a split second. Like, I guess he was looking around because it looks really bad. And he turned to me. I'll never forget this. And I talk about him in the book. And I told him too. I go, dude, I had to say it how it happened. He goes, no, I get it. I get it. He goes, and I go, Neil, you know, I love you, right? But I had to say what happened. So he looks at me and he goes, Jehoz, man, I don't see it. I don't see it. And he goes, he asks me, how much are you in? And he was referring to how much I invested already.
Yeah.
And I said to him, no, Nelly, it's going to happen. This is a done deal. And he goes, I just don't see things fitting. So what he saw, my point is, this is my point. And he's in the context. I put him in the section of fuck the naysayers. Now, Nelly, I adore Nelly. He's a very good friend of mine. He's one of my close friends. He'll do anything for me. So when I said I didn't give a fuck about Nelly, it wasn't referring to him. He didn't see what I saw.
Yeah.
I saw it. That's all that mattered, because the things that are going to happen in my life is according to my believing, not someone else's believing. And I'm not a religious cat, but going back to Jesus Christ, every time he dealt with people regarding believing, he always told me, your faith has made you whole. It wasn't the guy down the block. It was your believing had to make the situation. And when he dealt with the blind man, and he said, according to your believing, be this unto you. So today, things have not changed. It's according to your believing.
I agree with that 100%. 100%. Like, you got to believe in yourself. You got to believe in what you're doing. And if you don't, I mean, you're going to be lost. And you're not going to be able to accomplish what you want to accomplish. And I'm saying that from experience, because I've had ups and downs, and I have those moments. And, you know, and I fight. And I know what the right answer is. And the thing is, and sometimes it's hard to, you know, push those negative feelings aside and just know that, you know, this is what it takes, and that the answer is right there, and it's right there in your grasp. And, you know, for you to have that mentality and to push forward like that and to get these books out there, I think it's absolutely phenomenal. And the message you're getting across, I mean, do your kids ever get tired of hearing your positivity, or they're like, dad, enough? Or they're like, no, we want more of it.
They, you know, what's funny? I wouldn't say that, like, hey, dad, tell us more. But when the shit hits the fan, you know what they call? They
dad. Call me.
They don't call the mom.
Yeah.
They call me. Like, dad, I got a problem.
Because you're going to get to the bottom of it. We're going to solve it. We're going to get it. We're going to get an answer. We're going to get a solution.
Well, the first thing I do is I encourage them with words, for they can learn how to believe always for themselves, because I'm not always going to be around. Mm-hmm. Or someone else not going to be around. You want to know something? The power to renew your mind is the key to success. You don't just read one thing and say, I'm good for the rest of my life. No, you have to daily put these words in your mind to make your mind bulletproof. And that's what I teach my kids. But when the shit hits the fans, they call me. Like my son Michael is a struggling actor. He's 20, he's 29. Since 3 years old, he's been acting and modeling, and he's gotten so close to big gigs, and, you know, he's been on Law and Order and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But he's not where he wants to be. And you know, he's one of his good friends that he went to a place called Stage Door with. It's a acting camp. They still have it. Like Robert Downey Jr. went there.
Yeah.
A lot of famous went to this camp. It's like 4 hours upstate New York somewhere. Anyway, his good friend is you know that movie, Baby Racer, Baby Car Rider. He's got like 8 movies out. Oh, you know, yeah. What's that story? The main actor?
Yes. Okay.
What's his name? Anyway,
I know his name. I know who you're talking about.
He's really good friends with my son, right? Okay. I remember that kid when he was little. He was nobody. And my son, you know, he looks at me, goes, you know, I'm really happy for him. He goes, but Dad, I that's where I want to be. He goes, I go, and I tell him, Michael, nothing's impossible. Don't ever quit. You know, yeah. How many actors have lived out of their cars and they look like they was gonna fail, from Arnold Schwarzenegger to Sylvester Stallone to John Travolta.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I know that story way too well. Being somebody, you know, who, you know, and especially getting into a business that it's like hitting the lottery, you know, to succeed. It's not an easy business. And I have a lot of friends who, you know, have been in this business, have been in movies, have been on auditions. And I have people that I started with are now famous. And, you know, so it's, you see both sides of it. And I think it's awesome that you are there to encourage him and push him, because my father did that to me too. Like when I told him I wanted to be a comedian, he was like, better you than me. He goes, I couldn't do it. And he was like, he supported it every step of the way. Like he bought extra tickets, because in the beginning you got to do these bringers where you have to have a certain amount of people there to get on stage. And if I was short tickets, he bought tickets like to me to get my stage time, and came to every single show. Like, you know, it was, and he always encouraged it. And, you know, and I did, I went at it hard for a lot of years, and I had some stuff that, you know, just didn't hit. You know, you do these projects and it doesn't get picked up, but you don't, you know, I learned a long time ago that was going to happen. I was, I'll tell a quick little story here. I don't know if you've ever heard of a comedian. His name is Carl LeBove. He recently passed away. He was Sam Kinison's opener. So he was around with the Wild, those guys like Bill Hicks and those guys. And so he called himself, he was a thousandaire, because he was opening for Sam. He was making a lot of money, but he was living the millionaire's lifestyle with Sam. And he, you know, been through every up and down of comedy. And I, very early on in my comedy career, I got a Montreal audition, which Montreal Comedy Festival is one of the biggest comedy festivals in the world. I was asked to be on an audition for it. It was a Governor's Comedy Club in Levittown. And I got there first, and I was really nervous. And Carl was sitting there eating dinner in the green room. And he goes, you nervous, Ant? I go, yeah, actually, I'm very nervous. He goes, well, don't be. You're not going to get it. And I'm like, what? And he goes, I'm not telling you that to be negative. I'm just telling you that you're not going to get this. It's, you know, and guess what? He goes, you're going to audition for 50 million things in this business, and you're not going to get it. He goes, there's going to be that one thing you're going to get, and that's your break. And I think about that. And it's true. Everything you throw against the wall, everything you do when you keep fighting for, it's that one opportunity, that one chance, that's something that's going to hit. And it doesn't mean that you're not good at what you do. So I'd love to hear that, you know, your son's an actor and that you're encouraging it and you're pushing him to do it, because it's his passion. And believe me, nothing makes him happier than when he's doing his thing. I mean, as a performer, that's where he feels the most love, acceptance, and everything else about himself is when he's doing that. Because I know for myself, sometimes I'll even feel out of place at family functions, like I don't belong. And it's just the way we're wired. We're performers. We're different. But when we're doing our thing in front of people, it all comes together. And it's like, you know, and that's how you can get your, you know, as your book's called, live your fucking story. That's your story.
You know, I tell all my kids, there's no plan B. Michael, yeah. There's no B. Once you set up for plan B, you're done.
And my mother used to say to have a plan B, and I never wanted a plan B.
I never had one.
Yeah, she was coming from the you know, I understand where she was coming from, that she hadn't even had a plan A that was taken away from her right away. Her plan was, you're 18, you're on the street. You know, you have to go get a job in an apartment. And she worked 3 jobs to have an apartment and whatever. And, you know, her and my father worked for everything their whole lives and gave us a great life. And so there wasn't like a chance until she made her own plan, you know, and she did a thing. So I get where she's coming from in that aspect. Like, she didn't have, like, you know, I was very lucky that, you know, I was very supported in anything I wanted to do. And my brother too. Like, you know, my brother was, his goal was to own a deli by the time he was 30. He had it at 29. and he's got a very successful business going. And, you know, I don't know how he must love it because he still does it every day, but you know, he takes care of his family. He's got a beautiful house, beautiful home. And, you know, it's something that he always wanted. He said by the time he was 30, he was going to do it, and he did it. And he did it a year early, which is awesome.
I let me see something. Hold on a second. I know it's in my conclusion. Give me a second.
Okay.
I want to say word for word. Hold on a second. Basically, I say you don't recall. I don't know where it is in my conclusion. But anyway, basically, you never regret. I'm going to put it in other words now. You never regret. You never regret for trying things, yep. Right? You're going to look back in your life with regret with things that you didn't try. I'd rather fall in my face 1,000 times and give it all I got than look back and say, I was afraid to do it. And another thing that I want to say, one of the best ways to kill animosity mm-hmm. towards yourself and other people is do what you love.
Absolutely. 100%. Do what you love. Because I know I would have regretted never getting on stage that night and trying comedy. And even if it was what I thought it was going to be, a bucket list thing, one and done, I could still sit here today if I never got back on stage again going, well, I did it. I gave it. I did what I wanted to do. And, you know, the book is called Live Your Fucking Story by Jose Ramon. It's available on Amazon. They can get it on Amazon.
On Amazon.
Definitely pick that up and follow Jose on Instagram, the official Jose Ramon. I can't wait to see more what comes out of this, man. I really want to thank you for joining me today on the podcast. It was an awesome talk, awesome conversation. I'm motivated. I feel like I got some good stuff in me. Just listening to your story, listening to the stuff from your book, man. And everybody, please go check out this book. It's you need this. You need the kick in the ass. This is it. This is it right here. And again, it's a positive message to live your story. And Jose, anything else you want to plug before we get out of here?
I want to plug one thing.
Okay.
I want to quote one person from my book.
It's Anthony DiDomenico, and I'm kidding. I can't believe I ate the whole thing.
I'm gonna read one of the last paragraphs.
Okay.
The last paragraph in the instruction. I think it's a good way to end it. Ready?
Right.
Live your life through what you love to do. It's your story. Why would you do something that doesn't bring you love? We all have one life. Let's not waste it on things that don't bring us happiness, joy, and fulfillment. I wish I could climb out of these pages and shake you while I tell you live your fucking story. I would like to end this introduction with a quote on life. Here's the quote. If you love life, don't waste time, for time is what life is made up of. Bruce Lee.
I love it, man. I love it. Thank you so much, Jose, for being on the podcast tonight. I can't wait to catch up again. We'll be talking, and I definitely would love to have you on down the road because I know there's gonna be a lot more good things coming from you, and I want to share that with the people.
I'm also gonna send me your address. I'm gonna send you a signed book.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Thank you so much. All right, everybody. I want to thank Jose for joining us on the podcast. Also, want to thank everybody here for joining me live on Facebook. Podcast is also available at anchor.fm/KMF podcast. Also available on iTunes, 5-star rate and review. Love hearing from you guys and bragging about the best podcast listeners out there. Of course, that is you guys. We are played in and out each week by Hollow and their single Something to Believe. My best friend Nick wrote this song. Check it out on iTunes. And while you're there, his new band Demon Scar is releasing new music like crazy. Just dropped the Whiskey Bootleg. It's a live album from their show at the Whiskey A Go-Go in December. Check it out at demonscar.bandcamp.com. Long Island, only one place to go for your deli needs this summer. That's Finn's Deli, 4646 Merrick Road in Massapequa. Tell my brother Mike you heard the plug on the show and then get yourself an Uncle Cheese, the best sandwich out there. Not because it's named after me, because it really is that good. Check them out, finnsdeli.com. Once again, thank you so much to everybody who joined us on tonight's broadcast on the live feed and everybody listening at home on your podcast listening devices. This has been episode 280. Have an awesome week, and I'll talk to you later.